I want to talk about a specific event that will take place in America's very near future, which could actually bring our country and our way of life to a grinding halt. This looming crisis is related to the financial crisis of 2008, but it is infinitely more dangerous. As this problem comes to a head, I expect there to be riots in the streets, arrests on an unprecedented scale, and martial law enforced by the U.S. military. And that brings us to today. The same financial problems I've been tracking from bank to bank, from company to company, for the last 5 years have now found their way into the U.S. Treasury. The next phase in this crisis will threaten our very way of life. The savings of millions will be wiped out. This disaster will change your business and your work. It will dramatically affect your savings accounts, investments, and retirement. It will change everything about your normal way of life, where you vacation, where you send your kids or grandkids to school, how and where you shop, the way you protect your family and your home. I know that debts don't just disappear. I know that bailouts have big consequences. Of course, the most important part of this situation is not what is happening, but rather what you can do about it. You see, I can tell you with near 100% certainty that most Americans will not know what to do when commodity prices, things like milk, bread, and gasoline, soar. They won't know what to do when banks close and their credit cards stop working, or when they're not allowed to buy gold or foreign currencies, or when food stamps fail. In short, our way of life in America is about to change, I promise you. In short, I believe that we as Americans are about to see a major, major collapse in our national monetary system and our normal way of life. Basically, for many years now, our government has been borrowing so much money, very often using short-term loans, that very soon we will no longer be able to afford even the interest on these loans. You may not think things are that bad in the U.S. economy, but consider this simple fact from the National Inflation Association. Even if all U.S. citizens were taxed at 100% of their income, it would still not be enough to balance the federal budget. We'd still have to borrow money just to maintain the status quo. That's absolutely incredible, isn't it? Yet I've never seen this fact reported anywhere else.
American media is a business, and it has a mission, not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with the capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And it is a good day! This is Sean Kennedy reporting you from the internet for Monday, April the 4th, 2011. And that's right, you're listening to Newsreel, a wild global sit-rep on core political tyranny, technology, and trends for your headspace and timing. Rand Media is taking a stand for free speech today, and just by listening and distributing this program, you are too. You can follow up on all of these news stories, and you can check my facts by going to my live journal, which is always going to be there, I think, even after Facebook and everybody else kind of falls by the wayside. I think that live journal is still going to be going strong. And you can get there by going to sean_kennedy.livejournal.com. This is a free podcast that can be heard on Red Radio Talk, Red Mercury, SE, SRN1, Wild Bunch Radio, KJAG Radio, Osprey Networks, Creek Radio, iTunes, Podcast.com, Podcast Alley, and every Thursday night in Second Life Node Archers. You can hang out at grid 155-74666, which such cool people as Dark One, Sun Killer, Napalm Howlett, Black Cat 96, Age Dak Avamode, Anthony L, Sir Dark, Xerxes Core, Epex Prior, Majuan, Nug Nug, Yukasaki, Zelanzi, Holtzkrantz, or whatever his name is. Which, don't feel bad, Zolazani. I mean, at least you didn't get it as bad as Cizeris did. And let's not forget that we are broadcasting also on Radio 99, transmitting on a frequency of 66.3 kilohertz. To all places that are in fact available. You know what they're finding out on Facebook right now? They're actually saying that on Twitter, Not on Facebook, but on Twitter, they're saying that 5% of the population is doing like 90% of the work. And anybody who's ever, you know, been involved in any sort of blogging or sites or whatever, that's always the way it is. You'll start up a new site, you'll get like 5,000 people will sign up, and like 10 will actually, you know, work and put the stories up. That's kind of how it works. And now it's a big revelation to the internet that, holy cow, that's what's happening with Twitter. Well, no big shock there. And Facebook, well, that just kind of seems to be more and more a bad idea. If you want to find me on Facebook, I'm pretty easy to find, Sean Kennedy. You know, I've recently been kind of going on my really hardcore, it's not going away, the whole diving, treasure hunting, getting a Navy thing. And I'm always aware of the fact that, I, you know, because I hate Scientology. I've always hated Scientology. And L. Ron Hubbard did exactly the same thing. He started making money. What did he do? He built a Navy. And that's how the Sea Org got created. And if you don't know about the Sea Org, it's really terrifying. They have a cruise ship. It's like, if I could be L. Ron Hubbard, I'd like to do that. I just wouldn't be such a dick about what I'd do with the religion. You know what I mean? Like, it would be great. You know, because there's lots of religions out there. Like, honestly, there's the headbanging rock crowd, and there's the dead Jew on a stick crowd, and there's all the different crowds of religions of the world that have been, you know, basically fucking shit up for a really long period of time. And people need religion. I don't know why. I'm not happy about that, but some people do. Me, personally, not so much. I like being spiritual. I like the idea of life after death, all that stuff. But, you know, honestly, religion, some people need it. So, you know, if you have to have a religion, why not have a religion that doesn't turn people into mindless slaves? Why not have a religion that's for ravers or something, you know, like the lollipop religion? And they're hard. Everyone's like, well, you know, anybody will believe anything. Religions are hard to come up with. I mean, yeah, the race car driver guy did the alien thing, and yeah, it's pretty nuts, but he's got the aliens in there and everything. It's kind of hard, you know, to actually come up with a really good religion that doesn't, you know, get people killing each other. Because I tell you, people will kill each other over anything. Any kind of religion, they'll do that. And I'm sure, and I've said this before, that if L. Ron Hubbard had seen how much damage Scientology has done and how it's fucked up people's brains and people are dying and everything because of it, I'm really sure that L. Ron Hubbard himself would have said, no, I'm not going to do that. That's a really bad idea. You know, he'd, like, want to unmake the bomb. But there's also the truth that, well, if L. Ron Hubbard didn't do it, then some other psychopath would have done it. I mean, Hitler did it. I mean, Hitler did exactly the same thing that L. Ron Hubbard did, only he took his whole religion and kind of twisted it up and made it really nuts and wound up killing, like, hundreds of millions of people. So not so good, you know? You got to be careful with people's psyches and stuff like that. So I'm, you know, but if I could do that, man, I would build a Navy. God, that'd be sweet. And if you would like to join my Navy, you could do so probably through my Facebook page, because currently that's the conduit we're using for connecting logs globally. I've got lots of people. I think everybody should make friends with everybody on Facebook so no one can track your movements, kind of like a broadcast shotgun effect, because that way if you make too many connections, they can't see what's going on. So find me on Facebook and I'll friend you. Just offer me a friend request. I'll give it to you. No problems. Whatever. I'll friend anybody. But, you know, I'm the quickest ban hammer ever. Like, I don't know anybody who bans as quickly as I do. I am like a merciless Old Testament God when it comes to the ban hammer. So, you know, just be aware of that. So, you know, you're welcome to hang around on the page and do fun stuff, just like any of my websites. If you go there and you grief me in even the marginalest way, maybe if I'm just even having a bad day, I'll ban your ass. And that's not to say you couldn't make another account and join back in again, but if I find out it's you, guess what's going to happen? Yeah, I know. Kind of vague and childish, but that's the internet, and that's why we love it so very much. On that, we got some feedback through the internet. Hi, Sean! Hi! Long-time listener to the show. Last episode, you mentioned you'd spoken word media. And I was wondering if you could give me some recommendations for spoken word media. I've listened to the After Now probably a dozen times over the years, and have slowly come to accept the fact that refreshing the website over and over won't actually make any more appear. Little smiley face. Yes. Emoticons are the gateway to Satan. Anyway, so other than War of the Worlds and Nightfall, do you know of anything else in the same sort of vein that I might enjoy? Which, I'm all about that. If anybody's got any suggestions, I mean, old-time radio play. Radio drama, of course, from the 40s is really great, because there was a whole, like, multiple era there where, you know, we didn't have any television, and everyone had to do funny things like read. Now, there's hot media and cool media. Cool media is things like books, because it's so fucking cool. You have to give it energy. Hot media comes at you all the time. So radio, video, that's all hot media. Now, for hot media is great because, you know, you don't have to do much. You can be driving, keeps you awake, all that kind of jazz. So what you want to be looking at, of course, is any kind of like hot media. If books are great, so audiobooks would be the first place. If you like radio drama and you're like, what should I be into? Well, okay, you probably like radio drama because you like a certain genre. Like if you left after now, there's lots of audiobooks, post-apocalyptic audiobooks. World War Z is pretty decent. We listened to that one. That one's kind of fun if you haven't checked that out. There's lots of stuff out there that you can fill an eye, whatever device, with a million tunes, MP3s, gigs and gigs and gigs of it, and you'll never have to go, you know, quietly again. Make sure, though, that, you know, if you are going to be doing a lot of hot media, and this is a habit that I'd love to get into, not because it is easy, but because it is hard, I would like to start taking, like, a language class, like Pimsleur. You know what I mean? Get some Pimsleur courses, do, like, one a day so you can pick up another language. Because they've proven it. Like, they know that if you speak multiple languages, your brain is better. It's just the truth. Like, you won't get Alzheimer's as quickly. Speak multiple languages, brain is better. And there's all kinds of educational courses you can get on there. I mean, if you've always wanted to... Maybe you've always been crappy at math. Everybody hates math. Well, not everybody. I hated math. Math sucks. French sucks, too. Not the people, just the language. Can't do it. Can't do it. French, tried to learn it, sucking bad. Tried to learn Spanish, again, did a little bit better with French, but, you know, I didn't give it too much of a shot. So even if you hated math, and you didn't have a natural talent for it, imagine if there was, like, some audiobook on math that you could get, and you could, like, you could make yourself a super saturation media diet for your brain case that you could just, bam, nail it, bam, nail it. And give yourself a mix, give yourself some music in between, but you're always doing math, and you will do this until you master this skill. Because all this stuff is skills, and you can learn it. Some stuff you learn easy, other stuff you learn hard, but it's your choice whether or not you learn it. So I'm personally, you know, since I'm kind of always about the self-improvement thing, you have to master your environment, or your environment will master you, show some determination, get out there, and try to learn a language. So that would be something else I would point you at as well. So, you know, audiobooks, thanks. That'll do the whole theater of the mind thing. And if not that, then you can fill a library. There's literally libraries full of audiobooks. Stay away from the stuff. Don't go too far back, though, because I find that the further you go back, the language starts getting really weird and it gets pretty hard to understand. But, you know, you can accustom yourself to it, I suppose. It's interesting reading. Personally, because I'm like a scuba diving nut, I've been saturating myself with all these great books from the 50s and 60s on scuba diving, and wow, let me tell you, some of those guys, they're definitely not writers, you know what I mean? They're a bunch of crazy guys with fins on. So let's get into some news. In core political surveillance news. Yeah, it's the new era, isn't it? The cyberpunk age is upon us. So let's look back at all the cyberpunk figures and what did they have in common? Well, they were really in charge of their electronics. They knew exactly where they were. They knew who knew where they were. And they were able to, you know, use the system against itself. They had a series of tools called daemons that they would use on their decks. And they would be their very own computer keyboard cowboys who would transcend the net outside the walls of reality. This was their whole world. So now that's reality. We have people that are gainfully employed, doing nothing but monitoring the internet, making sure the internet stays connected. If we are not living in a cyberpunk age, I don't know when we would be. Of course, where's all the tech, though? Where's all the tech? And that's what we're going to cover a lot on this show, because holy crap, is there a lot of black ops, spy ops, covert ops stuff going on, and it's only going to get worse. In core political surveillance news, thank you very much, Yuka Saki. Yuka Saki, incidentally, has a great little show he puts together over at Red Octagon Studios. You want to go check that out. Fun stuff. Bunch of guys who are 100%, once you get over the fact that, you know what, they're doing this on their own, and they're out there just doing their thing, I'll tell you, it's honest, and you won't meet a better crew of people who get your brain thinking. Anyway, in core political surveillance news, he sent me in this story. A user discovered a keylogger pre-installed and two brand new Samsung laptops. The company admitted now, that they were there to monitor the performance of the machine and find out how it was being used. Well, yeah, that's what spying devices do. Mohammed Hassan wrote in Mitch Kabe's Security Strategies newsletter that as soon as he received his Samsung R525 laptop, he ran a full system scan, as one would, and found a commercial keylogger called StarLogger, like an off-the-shelf component. StarLogger claims it records every keystroke made on the computer, even on the password-protected boxes. Starting up whenever the computer starts up, the software emails results at intervals to a specified email address and will even include screen captures. Hassan ended up buying a second Samsung laptop, the model R4540, and found the same keylogger installed on that one. So that would just That tells me that if you buy two in a row, different models, that all Samsung laptops have a keylogger on there that's emailing home data. That's what that tells me. That also, therefore, tells me that you don't buy Samsung laptops. Period. Done. End of list. Unless there's some kind of reason that you need to have a Samsung laptop. I don't know if they're the best laptops ever. If they are, then great. Then you treat the laptop like you're purchasing a big box of infected biohazard. You bring the thing home in your Pelican case. You open it up. You herf it. You nerf it. You completely wipe this thing down to the wires and then rebuild it into what you want, making sure that there isn't, like, you know, hardware BIOS, hard-encoded stuff on chips on the motherboard and all that kind of jazz. But that's the level you're going to have to go to. Because think to yourself, if I was living in a Max Headroom, Johnny Mnemonic, cyberpunk universe, what would I do with this laptop when I bought it? And that's what you need to do, because that's kind of where you're living right now. I'm just saying, you know, you want to be aware of that. So he goes on saying the fact that both models on the same files were found in the same location supported the suspicion that the hardware manufacturer Samsung might know about this software on its brand new laptops. Maybe? Hassan reports that the first Samsung support personnel denied that they installed the software and directed him to Microsoft. Blame Microsoft. But even then, eventually admitted that Samsung was responsible. As Hassan notes, the incident is reminiscent of the Sony BMG rootkit fiasco of 2005, which we reported to you first here on Newsreel. At the time, Sony BMG used a rootkit to monitor computer use behavior and limit how music CDs were used on the computer. Kabe said that Samsung has not responded to further requests for comment. So, you know, there's a story that's not going to get picked up by anyone, because, of course, Samsung advertises with everybody, right? Think about all the Samsung products that advertise around, and you need to be aware that Samsung, like Sony, are pricks, because any corporation that would install spy software, could you imagine? Could you imagine if you bought a house, moved into the house, and you found out there was cameras installed in your house, in your child's bedroom, in your bedroom, monitoring what you're doing so that the government could serve you better? You would lose your mind. You'd have kittens right there. What's that? It's a camera! Ah! Meow! That's exactly what would happen. Your brain would come out your nose and run around the room. And yet, you know, somehow, with the laptop, it's not that big of a deal. You know, for some reason. And of course, it's about leverage. What are you going to do about it, consumer? Huh? What are you going to do, consumer? Are you going to write a letter? Is that what you're going to do? You're going to write a letter? You're going to blog about it? Is that what you're going to do? Well, nobody's going to listen to you, consumer, because you know what? We own the media. So what are you going to do, huh? Well, I'll tell you what you do. You write a letter to Newsreel. It comes into Sean Kennedy. He puts that on Newsreel. And then everybody knows about it. Before you know it, we're all sitting there talking about, why is it exactly that we're buying Samsung products? Because we can vote with our dollars, can't we? Yes, we can. So, you know, next time somebody comes up to you and says, hey, what do you think of the new Samsung laptop? You say, I think it's insecure. And when they feed you a bunch of bullshit about the operating system and all the rest of it, you go, no. It's because Samsung, you know, bugs all their equipment. And you refer them to this story, which you can find quite easily on my LiveJournal account. SeanKennedy.LiveJournal.com. Anyway, just, you know, whatever. Type Sean Kennedy in Google. I got a bigger footprint than Bigfoot on the internet. All right, so just, you know, you can find it, get there, get to the link. It'll be all hot links. You can search it on the left-hand side. No problem. You'll be able to get the link and prove your point. The point is, you got to tell people that Samsung is doing this shit because nobody else is going to, so the responsibility lands on you. Knowledge begets responsibility. Sorry to yoke you with that. Now, we got some Gattaca news sent in by Ice Hawk. Thank you very much. He's got a cool name, Ice Hawk. That's a very cyberpunky name. Did I name you? I don't think I did. I don't think that Ice Hawk doesn't sound like one of mine. Anyway, check out DARPA's latest bright idea to fund multidisciplinary research proposals in the area of genomic and proto-enomic technologies that can continuously and persistently record specific natural or human promulgated environmental, physical, and genomic events without the genetic or epigenetic systems of microorganisms. If you had to read that over about 10 times and still didn't get that, that's exactly how the author felt too. And the author has a master's in immunology. So let's dial that back. It sounds to me like DARPA wants to create a digital spy technology that is encoded into the genes of a living bug. Let me read that again. DARPA wants to create a digital spy technology that is encoded into the genes of a living bug. It will apparently record and report any modifications being made to the bug itself. Kind of like the track changes option on your Word document. Why would DARPA care about changes in this particular bug, you ask? Because it might be patented. Patented genes and microbes are precious biocommodities in the research world. Essentially, DARPA wants to invent a tech tool to protect their intellectual property, in this case, mutant bacteria and viruses, from other scientists. The program is called Chronicle of Lineage Indicative of Origins, or CLIO. Chronicle of Lineage Indicative of Origins, C-L-I-O, CLIO. Okay, you want to remember that, because anything you see with CLIO on it, you want to get away from. There's been a prolonged rumpus, over the question of genetic patents. No shit, I'm not making that up. They actually used the word rumpus in this article. Basically, if you have a gene patent, it means you've managed to isolate a new gene from a microbe and yours to profit from it. Now, no one else can make you study that gene without your permission, which is fucking retarded. That's the dumbest thing ever in the history of the world. One of the greatest ways to like stop research and knowledge and information and science is to lock it up in a tower where nobody can get at it. Science is one of those kind of things that it needs to be understood. I remember before, see, there used to be secret societies and they guarded knowledge and you had to be an initiate and then they would teach you this stuff. So this is just another way of creating secret societies so that the masked, unwashed, you know, they don't get the power of knowledge, especially with things like genes or genomic research or anything like that. Something that, you know, might save lives. Because after all, nothing sells like a product that saves lives. If you got a product that you need to save a life, hey, just look at the pharma fascist, you know, core political medical motherfuckers out there who are charging thousands of dollars to give people medicine. Yes, when, you know, and these are, of course, if your insurance covers that, that's fine. But if you happen to come from a country, say, outside of North America, like in, say, India or South America or Southeast Asia or something like that, where you don't have any kind of money because you're essentially almost in a quasi-slave-like status, I guess you get to die because you're not part of the secret club that is able to study these genomics. And the really smart doctors you have who put themselves through school and have worked themselves to death and their parents died to make them doctors, yeah, they can't do that either and they can't save their people. All because of this little tiny CLIO thing. It's like just an evil concept as far as I'm concerned. There is a point, I'm an author, I understand what it is to be making money from your ideas. Okay, I understand that. But some things are more important than the individual. Medicine and science are examples of things that are more important than any one person. I don't care who they are. So, yeah, something to think about there. Let's move into some Oilmageddon news. Yet another fantastic example of people trying to shut people up over a problem that is happening right now. Never mind the fact that we've got toxins raining on the Gulf. When this shit happened, I told people, get the fuck out of the Gulf. You need to get out of the Gulf. If you live in the Gulf of Mexico, get out. Okay, seriously, things are bad there. It's a biohazard area. And more we're getting these stories and they're trying to suppress it. It's terrible. Evil Von Scary, who runs a great show himself, he sent me this story. Scientists are probing deaths of baby dolphins in the area affected by last year's BP oil spill that have been ordered by the government. Sorry. Scientists probing the deaths of baby dolphins in the area affected last year by BP's oil spill have been ordered. The scientists have been ordered by the government not to speak about the project. Don't talk about this. What? They're baby dolphins. I mean, fuck, who cares about their... They're animals. We eat animals. We kill dolphins wholesale. Nobody cares about dolphins. The Japanese are spearing these things with bats with nails in them. Why wouldn't we be able to talk about dolphins? That's just retarded. Anyway, wildlife biologists who have been contracted by the National Marine Fisheries Services to investigate a huge rise in dolphin mortality this year, must keep their findings confidential. The gagging order was imposed because the review of the deaths and part of the federal criminal investigation of last year's BP disaster. Oh, I see. Death on the sands, evidence from the spike in deaths in the last 3 months being collected for a criminal case, civil litigation, and a detailed study of the environmental effects of last year's mammoth oil spill. This is interesting because, of course, they can't talk about it because there's going to be legal proceedings. But after they suppress all that information, that legal proceedings will be sealed and no one will ever talk about it. So they'll gather the information because people are going to gather that information anyway. They'll just make sure they control the jar that it's locked in. you see. And that's why it's important that we have free access to information. That's why this is so incredibly important. A letter sent out to senior scientists who are not working on the project. And are baffled by the silence because of the seriousness of the legal case. No data or findings may be released or presented or discussed outside the investigative team without prior approval. About 90 dolphins died last year, but this year the toll has jumped to 200 already. Dr. Aaron Forges, a marine biologist with Fishery Services, said, "We are treating the evidence, which are the dolphin samples, like a murder case." This is hilarious. This is such a bullshit clause. These dolphins aren't dying because they're swimming through the oil. That's not why these dolphins are dying. These dolphins are dying because they're eating toxic fish. Because that's what dolphins eat. Fish. So, there's something wrong with the fish is what's going on there. Of course, they're feeding the fish to the army. Yeah, that's one of the downsides, isn't it? That's one of the downsides. Yeah, the army's going to get the fish. The prisons will be getting the fish. So, you know, maybe now's not a great time to be eating fish in the army. Maybe you've got an allergy, you know? If you've got an allergy, they won't make you eat it. So I just wouldn't eat the fish. I'd just get more mashed potatoes. Just say, hey, what is that? Be like, well, I got a choice. You got chicken or fish? I'll have the chicken. The chicken's 5 days old, and it's kind of rotten. That's okay. I'll eat the chicken. It's not full of poison. You know, one of those kind of things. So, something to be aware of. Again, more people telling you to shut the fuck up or to have an alternate story so that you don't believe what the media is, you know, going to tell you. Don't believe that stuff because apparently the media can't even talk about it. You have to go to shows like Newsreel and Me. How sad is that? How sad is that, that I become the voice of truth? Really? Honestly, have you listened to this show? Honestly, this is the state of honest journalism. It's fallen on the shoulders of Sean Kennedy. Are you serious? Sick and weird. Sick and weird. Of course, you know, everybody knows there's something wrong with talking on cell phones, too. This is the other one. This is one that gets me. Ever since I've had a cell phone, because I'm old enough to have been using a cell phone since they showed out, if I talk for too long on a cell phone, I get a headache. Okay? This is my own experience. This is something that has happened to me. It's like grabbing a hot poker, you burn your hand. And you go into the other room, and you've got a blister on your hand. You go, God damn it, I burned my hand on that poker. And people say, no, that wasn't the poker. No, that totally wasn't a poker you burned your hand on. Yeah, it totally was. I just grabbed it. It was red. No. That's genetic. That's a pre-existing condition with that poker. You know, really. Now, I'm not talking about how, you know, what's going on here in that a poker or a cell phone is going to cook your brain. But what I'm saying here is that when I use the cell phone and it's on the side of my head and I do this for a long period of time, I wind up getting a bit of a headache. Some cell phones I don't. Hands-free units, I don't get that. But I get it a little bit. And then you go to these science dudes, just like the hot poker, and they're like, no. It's not the cell phone. See, we got all the charts right here. I'm like, dude, but I got this blister on my hand from where I touched the poker. No. Totally not the poker. And people buy that shit. They buy it. But now, no. Because, of course, if you were to say, if it was ever proven that cell phones cause problems, man, the cell phone industry is massive. We're talking billions of dollars. So they're going to crush that. So, but still, people have to account for this weird feeling they get in their heads when they use the cell phone. So, in cellular brain fake news, in a culture where people cradle their cell phones next to their head with the same consistency and the affection that toddlers hold their security blankets, it was unsettling last month when a study published by the Journal of American Medical Association indicated that doing so could alter brain activity. This is interesting. Alter brain activity. You know, that's what happens when you shoot someone in the head with a 1911. Boom! I've altered your brain activity. The report said it was unclear whether the changes in the brain and increase in the glucose metabolism after using the phone for less than an hour had any negative health or behavioral effects. But as many people wondered what they could do to perfect themselves short of gasp using a landline. Cell phones are fantastic and have done much to increase productivity, said Dr. Nola Vokal. Yeah, notice nobody's, oh, we love cell phones. We love them. We love them. This isn't against cell phones. The lead investigator of the study, the director of National Institute of Drug Abuse and the National Institute of Health. I'd never tell people to stop using them entirely. No. No, cell phones are good. We love cell phones. It's just that we've noticed, you know, yet in light of her findings, she advises users to keep the cell phones at a distance. And by putting them on speaker mode and using a wired headset, whenever possible. Yeah, it's not dangerous, but you just want to make sure you're wearing lead shielding when you stand in front of the radar dish. It's not dangerous at all. But, you know, just me personally, I would wear the lead suit. You know, I that's what I, you know, there's something wrong with the cell phones. Okay, come on, people. We all know this. I like technology, too. Okay, I think technology is pretty goddamn cool. I really, really do. Do I think that the cell phones are giving us cancer? I don't know. There's a lot of people that have problems with this stuff. But I think there's definitely something going on. And there's more than enough evidence out there to show that there's something going on, yet it's really, really crushed. So, you know, listen to your body. That's what I would take from this. A lot of people are like, John, you're a Luddite, don't be a Luddite. No, believe you me, if there's anybody here who's not a Luddite, it's me. I love technology. I love wearables. I wish we all got into wearables instead of cell phones, because that's what cell phones have turned into. They've turned into wearables, haven't they? Right? I mean, you know, remember when everybody wanted to have a wearable computer? What would be cooler, a cell phone or a wearable computer? Obviously the wearable computer, because you could use Skype on it. You could do a ton of stuff. So, what... But, of course, now, they can't really meter a wearable computer. They can meter a cell phone, but they can't meter a wearable computer. You just wait. Okay, I think there's something screwy going on with all the cell phone stuff that's happening right here. And mark my words, maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but in the future it's going to come down that these cellulars, they're doing damage to people. And I really think that that is the case. Honest to God. Cellular... Yeah, I always get hate mail when I cover these stories, and I hate saying these kind of stories. People are like, John, you're all blah, 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 because everybody loves their cell phones, right? I don't know how that happened, that maybe it's just the most brilliant marketing ever, that cell phones became some kind of sex symbol. You know, really, like, when was it that a cell phone became like this super sexy thing that everybody totally had to have? I don't get it. I totally don't understand why that is, but for some reason... People dig on them. Now, I like a gadget too, but, you know, there are limitations to your gadgets, and maybe hands-free might be the way to go. Because I know this much, if I lean on my cell phone or I'm talking, you know, you're talking to the girlfriend for a long period of time on the cell phone, you stop, you could feel it on the side of your head. So, I don't know. I don't know, man. In cyber war news. Now, this is unbelievable. We've got the brand new Iraq going on. It's like the iPod or the iTouch or the iPad or Iraq. You've got the cyber war. You betcha. This is the brand new money grab. After the aftermath of the revolution that brought down Egypt's Hosni Mubarak, protesters burst into the building that hosted the state security service and combed through thousands of documents left by the departed regime. Among the files listing paid informants, tortured confessions, acts of secretive manipulation was one rather exceptional document, the contract from an obscure German firm selling cyber war software to the Egyptian regime. The document, quickly posted to the internet, provided a detailed glimpse inside the black arts of today's world of electronic warfare. For those who study geopolitics of cyberspace, the revelation was hardly surprising. There's an arms race in cyberspace and a massively exploding new cyber industrial complex that serves it. The German firm is one small manifestation. It has become a truism to say that the offense has the advantage over the defense in cyber conflicts. Attack tools are cheap and widely available. Attackers can mount their assaults with lightning speed from anywhere on the planet to anywhere else, disguising their origins, masking responsibility. Scholars of war and human nature have long understood that in an offense-dominated environment such as this, the pressure is on to keep up or be left behind. Fear, insecurity increase, threats lurk everywhere, and rash decisions can lead to unexpected outcomes and chaos. While this may sound ominous for most, for those in the defense industry, it presents an irresistible market opportunity. A new cyber military industrial complex has exploded, estimated between 80 and 150 billion U.S. annually every year. 150 billion annually every year. That is some cyberpunk dollars right there. Cybersecurity and robotics, baby. You want to start taking some night school courses, that's the direction you want to go. Like Dwight Eisenhower's military-industrial complex before it, this massive cyber-industrial complex is intimately connected to militarized processes and the West, in particular the United States. So, you're looking for a job right now, considering the Army, don't join the infantry, that's a bad idea. Go, enroll yourself in a couple of courses so that, you know, it looks like you're training to be an electronics wizard. Sign up to go be a Rupert, get your bars, right? Go be an officer so you're not everybody's toady. Get yourself some trade skills, and then when you get out of the Army in 5 or 10 years, after they give you a bunch of money for it, you can make up any story you want. You can tell them anything you want, how incredibly badass you were. Don't lie, but you can exaggerate, and boom, you're in the door. You're an ex-military cyber warfare expert in an industry that's pulling in 80 to 150 billion a year. So, you know, you heard it on Newsreel. All right, that's what you want to do. Don't be stupid. All right, there's a lot of money floating around out here, and it's better to have a few wogs out there, people who, you know, kind of get it and understand what freedom's all about, the good guys. You know, I'd rather see those guys inside of cybersecurity positions rather than, you know, some dude who's just, you know, reading from the Oprah Book Club and, you know, honestly believes all the bullshit that they're feeding us. You know, honestly, I'd rather see that. And I'm sure that there's all kinds of wogs who listen to this story who are involved in law enforcement. I know I've gotten letters from some of them, but I'm even talking the guys in the military. There's a lot of military and ex-military guys who comment on my blog, comment on my live journal, comment on Facebook. There's a lot of people who show up and say that stuff. So I know that the show is getting out there to people, and we got the good people in the right places. And that's why it's important, it's super important that we don't just give up. Which is something I noticed, that's such an apathy. Oh, whatever, man, I'm just going to isolate, got to make my own way. You know? No. Okay, if you're trying to make your own way or do any of that kind of stuff, you're just going to wind up getting shot down. Okay, we've got to stick together as a group, but in such a way that they can't track us. So you have to have sort of ideas, kind of like that whole religion thing I was talking about. What if you could have a religion where you didn't have to be a dogmatic psychopath who, like, killed people? What if you could just be like, hey, don't be an asshole. That's the religion. I belong to the religion of don't be an asshole. If you see somebody on the street and they're in trouble and it looks like you can help, don't be an asshole. Go help them out. Don't be mean to people. Why? It's being an asshole. Don't be an asshole. That's the new religion, you know? Don't be an asshole. What would we call it? I guess you could call it the don't be an asshole religion, but if you come up with a good name for the don't be an asshole religion, send it in, newsreel@redradio.com. Now, speaking of religion, let's talk about mind rape. Yes. Yes, as we know, advertising is out there trying to take your soul. If they could have a cheerful way to talk about opening up your brain and, like, scooping out your skull so that they could take everybody's gray matter back so they could just turn you into a mindless slave, they would do it. So rather than do it all at once with, like, a scalpel and a chainsaw and, you know, an ice cream scoop, they're going to do it slowly over years and years using very subtle technology, like covered in this story in Mind Rape News. Oh, boy. If you think Facebook tracking what you post so they can show targeted ads to the right-hand side of your pages is a bit much, you better sit down. What they're considered to be a good thing, market researchers say, they now capture data on consumers' deep subconscious responses in real time, wirelessly. Deep subconscious responses in real time, wirelessly. They claim this is the equivalent of revolutionizing mobile in-store market research and media consumption at home. I call it Satan. Anyway, they're talking about Mind, M-Y-N-D. This is what it looks like, which manufacturers at NeuroFocus, I've covered them before, describes the world's first wireless full-brain EEG measurement headset. Obviously, as the company official claims, it opens up a new testing environment to consumers beyond the lab, such as the home, outdoor venues, movie theaters, shopping malls, auditoriums, with data being streamed to platforms including the iPad, iPhone, and other smart devices. Or, as industry observer Raggy Jin writes, this medical-grade mobile bone scanning hat will stream our conscious perceptions into a salesman or analyst's smartphone, where it'll be used to further hone the advertising machine that already demands our attention everywhere we go. Progress. Dr. A.K. Pradeep, chief executive of the Office of NeuroFocus, terms Mind a product for medical-grade scientific precision. A neuromarketing breakthrough providing new opportunities for our clients to gain critical knowledge and insights of how consumers perceive their brands, products, packaging, in-store marketing, and advertising at the deep subconscious level in real time. Now, let's understand that this new brain hat that Buddy's cooked up here, I think it's a great idea. Glad you got one. I think it's a good thing. The problem here, of course, is that, you know, I'm not going to give you my thoughts. So I'll take your little hat there. Don't you worry about that, Chuckles. And yeah, I'm going to look, I managed to get all the books before they were declared illegal. I'm going to actually reverse engineer this headset to make sure I lock this thing down so it's running on encrypted channels so that nobody can, you know, read my headset. I'm not just broadcasting my thoughts to be picked up by any idiot with a Wi-Fi antenna. And then I'll use this for my own capabilities, because, hey, I can think of a million ways you can. This could be used for amazingly cool stuff. Awesomely cool stuff. It can also be used for mind-rapingly evil psychotic neural marketing, which is what they want to use it for. So I think we should take this technology and redeem that shit Like, honestly, like, there's a lot of good stuff you can do with stuff like this, and there's a lot of bad stuff. So let's just take what we want. Of course, they're going to tell you you can't do that. It's illegal, right? Because it's their intellectual property licensing. If you can't take something apart that you bought, you don't own it. You've rented it. That's just the truth. So, you know, if it makes me a criminal to take apart my stuff, I guess that makes me a criminal. You know, because I'm here to tell you, I think it's far more criminal to be sitting there raping people's brains so that you could sell them more stuff. That's insidious. What a sick, sick thing to do. But I guess the good people who are into neuromarketing, they don't think that's such a big problem because, well, hey, after all, it's making money, right? As long as you make money, why not sell the organs? Fuck yeah. Let's, you know, we'll sell kids. Why not? It makes money. It makes money in UK secret police news. Now, the police used to be people who would go out to stop evil people. That was their job. They were to protect the public, okay? And then there was a crime that, you know, it was a cop, cops to set up traps and then lure people into a trap. For example, you have a female cop who goes out, meets some guy, makes the guy fall in love with her, and then convinces the guy to go steal something from a store, and then when the guy walks outside with the store, she arrests him. Okay, that's called entrapment. Oh, it used to be called entrapment, now it's just called, you know, police work, I guess. Number six, how ironic, the sixth police officer has been unmasked as an undercover spy in a protest movement as it emerged that Mark Kennedy, who spent several years posting as an environmental activist, is considering suing Scotland Yard. This is in the UK. In an interview with The Guardian magazine, Kennedy, who went rogue and offered to help environmental campaigners accused of planning to break into a power station, says he had suffered post-traumatic stress disorder and has been suicidal. His lawyers have been instructed to consider legal action against the police. The latest officer was reporting embedded in an anti-capitalist group for 4 years under this fake name of Simon Wellings. Newsnight BBC reported that his true identity was discovered through a police blunder. That's amazing. You're going to blow Buddy's cover after 4 years due to a police blunder? They call... Wellings inadvertently phoned a campaign with the globalized resisting capitalist movement on his mobile phone while discussing photographs of demonstrators with another officer at a police station. The call was recorded on the campaigner's answering phone, and Wellings heard it being pressed to identify protesters and demonstrations, according to Newsright. He is recorded saying, "She's Hannah's girlfriend, very overt lesbian. Last time I saw her, hair was about that long. It was blonde. A week before, it was black." So, an overt lesbian. Interesting. A very overt lesbian. Overt. Am I an overt heterosexual? I don't know. I guess I'd be an overt heterosexual. Like, you know, does that means that there would be covert heterosexuals. Jeez. How would you be a covert? What if you're like a gay guy or you seem like a, you know, you're an effeminate male? Does that make you a covert heterosexual? What a weird sort of terminology. So these cops are going out there now. And they're joining these groups, and they're waiting for people to screw up, and then they're nailing them, you know? And some of this stuff is looking dangerously close to entrapment. Like, a lot of these cops at these protests, they go out, they take off their, you know, they dress up like a protester, then they start breaking stuff, everybody else starts breaking stuff, and then the cops can move in and mop it up. It's kind of smart, because you don't want the protest there, so you just push the protest a little bit, push them over the line, and then everybody gets arrested, you get to use the tear gas, the dogs get fed, everything's great. But there's only one problem with that, which is that, you know, it's kind of wrong and not really what the police should be about. You know, now, of course, in the United States, we've got the whole, you know, Posse Comitatus Act has been revoked. So, you know, the cops can do pretty much, it's the army. You know, the police and the military are like the same organization now, which is, well, dangerous, to say the very least, because, well, the army and the cops are, well, they should be rather different. You know what I mean? They should be a different sort of they're policing the community, they're not occupying the community, which seems to be sort of like forgotten over time here. Into some pharma fascist news. I got all the best news tonight. I really do. As Tech Dirt recently discussed, the drug pipeline is running dry as Big Pharma's patents are beginning to expire. The drug companies are freaking out. For years, they've been spending money on research and testing to getting fewer results. This year alone, they're going to have 11 patents expire on drugs that bring in approximately $50 billion in revenue to the Big Pharma firms. Of course, the flip side is that consumers can start saving about 95% on the price of those drugs as generics hit the market. The drug companies have gotten to a point where the incremental increase in efficiencies are so small as to being meaningless. What's coming out is more personalized and targeted treatments for diseases, treatments that do not require bulk production of specific chemicals, but individual testing and personalized cares, and not lifetime treatments and repeat sales, but cures. The treatments will be expensive to begin with, but they will soon become less expensive over time. The business model of healthcare is about to change dramatically. The business model of healthcare. And Big Pharma needs to do something to maintain their profits. Unfortunately, they seem to have chosen a path of regulating the competition out of existence rather than competing and innovating. One way the drug companies have been coping is to repackage and rebrand health food supplements. Drugs like Lovaza, which is nothing more than fish oil you can get in health food stores, and lovastatin, which has been used for roughly 1,000 years, is a form of red yeast rice. In the case of lovastatin, the FDA banned the supplements because they are identical to a drug, thus subject to regulation as a drug. That is very convenient for drug companies, which now charges monopoly rents on the product, which increase the prices to ridiculous levels. Fish oil. That's right, they're banning fish oil. Fish oil, okay? That's not bullshit, man. They're starting to ban food, okay? So at what point do you go, wow, I guess I'm going to start being a food criminal? Because I'm here to tell you, I'm not going to start, like, they've already started doing this with all kinds of vitamins. If you get online and check this out, it's really terrifying what they're doing. I'm not really super happy about it. So, you know, you need to be aware that vitamins and all this stuff, it works. This stuff works. But they never used to talk about it working because, of course, there was drugs. But now that they can patent the drugs, you see, how long is it going to be before they patent garlic? Dude, if they could patent garlic, the wonders of garlic would be known to everyone. But, you know, do a little bit of research on your own. Take some accountability for your own health, because pharma fascism is just there to bleed you dry, make you broke, and then eventually it will kill you because you are of no more use. And to kill you, what will the pharma fascist use? Robots. Well, probably not. They'll probably use more drugs because that way they can make money and then sell your organs. But, you know, somebody's using killer robots because we got more killer robot news. Last month, we reported on the Atlas, the Cheetah, and the Cougar 820H robots that could detect people through walls by the sound of their breath and perform other feats of creepiness. Now, the design company TIA-Lynx Incorporated has developed a flying version, the Phoenix 40A. The miniature unmanned hexacopter, a six-bladed helicopter, the Phoenix 40A can detect motion and breathing inside a ground compound while flying. It can be controlled remotely over long distances out of harm's way by a person using a joystick on a laptop computer. The bot can penetrate reinforced concrete in a highly direct way using a narrow beam of multi-gigahertz radio frequencies in real time. It also has video cameras capable of imaging day or night. It's lightweight and agile, all which makes the copter suited for surveillance in a variety of situations. Additionally, it can provide a layout of a multi-story building and travel to more than one GPS destination on a single trip. The copter even helps locate undetonated landmines. Holy shit, this thing is like... this is what they dropped up on Hoth in Empire. You know, that's exactly where this bad boy is. But better yet, like its partner in the Team Terrorbot, the Cougar H-20H, the Phoenix 40A could serve less militant purposes, such as just finding people buried in rubble during a rescue mission, which is good. The United States Army provided funding to the California-based companies in order to develop the latest option in life-detecting unmanned aerial vehicles. Collect them all. Now, so we got the running robots, and of course, since this thing is remote, you could just kind of have it patrolling along, you know, a perimeter or a fence line, because now we've got these robots that's just simply a sensor suite that can be installed. The hunter-killer robots of the future are going to be terrifying. Totally terrifying. Now, a last-minute addition to the show, which got sent in. This is amazing. And now, I've talked about this before, but this is right out of my stories. In listeners' licensed news, over the last few years, we've noted that various collection societies around the globe have become more aggressive and more ridiculous in trying to get people to pay licensing fees for listening to music. Among the crazy stories that have popped up are cases of collection societies demanding cash from a woman who played music for her horses in a stable, a police station told to pay up because some police officers had radios on the public entertaining and on the radios on and the public entering the station could hear it, hotels being told they need to pay extra performance license because guests listen to radios in rooms, and of course, claims that ringtones, even legally licensed ringtones, require another license as a public performance. In some cases, these societies apparently hire people just to call up businesses if they hear music in the background. They demand payment. That is insane. Every time we post this kind of thing, people joke that they won't be long before they have to charge people for separate license for listening to music in your car and with the windows rolled down. We haven't quite reached that point yet, but the Belgian Collection Society of Sabam, who was recently caught accepting payments for made-up bands, is now claiming that truck drivers listening to the radio need to pay a performance fee as well, since the cabs of their trucks are technically their workplace. This is so like guys like Fat Ninja, who drive his rocket rig across the desert delivering goods and services to the great people of this land. Okay, he can't listen to the radio because he's actually breaking the law. Well, because he's a ninja who happens to be fat, I'm sure it won't really bother him. But just so you know, if you're a long-haul trucker, you know a long-haul trucker, Rant Media is there for you. As a matter of fact, we designed this stuff to keep you conscious as you're rocketing along through the supernatural highways of the world, okay? So absolutely, you can listen to this stuff nonstop if you can stomach it. It seems pretty extreme, even by the traditional insane collection society standards. Most admit they only seek to collection fees in cases where the public might hear the music. Going after truck cabs seems a bit beyond ridiculous, and thankfully, some of the Belgian parliament seem to agree, with one MP saying, "It's utter nonsense," unquote. Still, SBAM seems to understand by their right to collect in such cases, perhaps not really what an incredible laughing stock this makes them, or how it makes people respect copyright even less and less when such stories get out. That is absolutely retarded. The dumbest thing ever in the history of the world. But, you know, that's the kind of world we're living in. People will do anything they can. So this is why you need to be really, really aware of your technology and really, really aware of your environment. Because if you don't master your technology, it will master you. Now, some new Cyberpunk kit. Something we talked about before, sent in by Alex, is rad packs. These are, you know, of course, right, nuclear batteries. Well, they might sound dangerous, but nuclear batteries have been safely powering devices such as pacemakers, satellites, and underwater systems for years. They have an extremely long life and a high energy density compared to chemical batteries. However, they are costly and very large and heavy. Now, researchers at the University of Missouri are developing a nuclear battery that is smaller, lighter, and more efficient. Jay Kwan, assistant professor of electrical and computer engineering at MU, who's been working on building a small nuclear battery, admits that people get the wrong idea when they hear the term nuclear battery and think of something hazardous. Although nuclear batteries generate electricity or atomic energy like nuclear reactors, they don't use a chain reaction, instead using the emissions for the radioactive isotope to generate electricity, so there's no risk of the battery or pacemaker suffering a meltdown. The battery is being developed by Kwan and its research team, currently the size and thickness of a penny, is intended to power various nano electromechanical systems. M-NEMS. M-NEMS. Sounds like a candy. I like my M-NEMS. The team's innovation is not only on the battery size, but also its semiconductor, which is liquid rather than solid. The critical part of using a radioactive battery is that when you harvest the energy, parts of the radiation energy can damage the lattice structure of the solid semiconductor, Kwan said. By using a liquid semiconductor, we believe we can minimize that problem. Kwan has been collaborating with J. David Robertson, chemistry professor and associate director of the MU Research Center, is working to build the test battery at the facility. In the future, they hope to increase the battery's power, shrink its size, and dry various other materials. Kwan said the battery could be thinner than the thickness of a human hair. Interesting. Well, you know, some nuclear batteries would be pretty cool to have. I mean, who wouldn't like some nuclear batteries, really? You know, it would definitely beat that little copper bunny guy, that's for sure. Another piece of cyberpunk kit, which is about as cyberpunk kit as you can get, if not a rad pack, then let's talk about neural chips, once again sent in by Icehawk. Nerve cell tendrils readily threaded their way through tiny semiconductor tubes, researchers find forming a crisscross network like the vines twining towards the sun. The discovery that offshoots from the nascent mouse nerve cells explore the specifically designed tubes could lead to tricks for studying nervous system designs or testing the effects of potential drugs. Such system may even bring researchers closer to brain-computer interface that seamlessly integrate artificial limbs and other prosthetic devices. This is quite innovative and interesting, says nanomaterials expert Nicholas Cota of the University of Michigan and in Ann Arbor. There is a great need for interfaces between electronic and neuronic tissues. So what's going on here is that they've taken, on a microscopic level, they're able to guide the growth of nerves into these microtubes, specially designed microtubes to, like, house the nerves. So we're just on the very, very, very basic level, beginning to connect mind and machine through, like, a brain chip interface. So this is, there's a lot of heady stuff in this particular article. Check it out. It's pretty cool. But yeah, they got neural chips and they're on the horizon. Now, normally, when there's lines in the article like, this may lead to, you know, I don't like articles like that because it's, you know, it's vaporware. But something with neural chips, I mean, hey, that's something we want to keep close eyes on. So if anybody gets any more information about these neural chips, I definitely want to hear more about that. And right now they're at the, hey, we can make something microscopic, touch something else microscopic. But, you know, that's how it starts. Now, as much as I hate it, these iPhones and proprietary devices are here to stay. The smartphones are here to stay. They're going to be around for a while. I would rather have people who are into wearables, some way that you can make wearables so that they're better. I'm still into that idea. I don't like particularly the thought of having my electronic device. Like, I like to have my phone be my phone, and if I want to connect my phone to anything else, I'll tether it. I'm not really into having everything. Convergence is bad. I like redundancy. Redundancy is good. But there are applications that are available that are pretty impressive, and they're getting more impressive as time goes on. So in the cyberpunk future, it would be amiss from my goal if I was to not talk about them. So let's talk a little bit about some killer apps which make up your daily hack today. Covert apps, number one. Thanks very much, Jay, for sending this in. A group of senators from four different states have sent a message to Apple yesterday to pull any apps from the App Store that supposedly alert drivers of drunk driving checkpoints. The letter, which was also sent to Google and RIM, stated that giving drunk drivers a free tool to evade checkpoints, putting innocent families and children at risk, is a matter of public concern, and mentioning one such app is called Phantom Alert. The CEO of the company that makes the app claims it's completely legal, saying the police often advertise the same checkpoint locations before they're set up, warning drivers to be careful in certain areas and never to drink and drive. A police officer in Oregon, according to Computer World, is pretty indifferent to the whole argument. If these things like these apps increase awareness on the part of drivers to slow down and to drive on the signs posted in the conditions, and they said that helps people stay alert and drive safely. So it seems like much ado over something that's not a huge issue. Of course, people are using the apps to dodge checkpoints. It could be a problem. Police are using the advertising these things ahead of time anyway. It's hard to see why these apps are under fire. Well, I can see why they're under fire. It's pretty obvious. The cops are like, hey, man, this technology is being used by the other guys. I don't want them to know. Are you kidding? That's one of the cool... That app right there made me think, wow, I'd like to know what's going on in my environment. I'd like to extend my situational awareness into the digital realm. Absolutely. Sign me up. If somebody was to show me that in the beginning, I might think that would be a little bit more interesting. Something else talking about this is a good one, too. I like this app as well. Creepy, sent in by Slipstream JC. Creepy, this is another part of your daily hack, is a package described as a geolocation information aggregator. It turns heads in privacy circles, but people should be worried. We chat to its creator, Yanis Kavanis, to find out what's going on. Creepy is a software package for Linux or Windows with Mac OS X ports in the works that aims to gather public information on targeted individuals via social networking services in order to pinpoint their location. It's remarkably efficient at the job, even if its current early form, and certainly lives up to its name when you see it in use for the first time. You can enter a Twitter or Flickr username into the software's interface or use the built-in searchability to find users of interest. When you hit geolocate target button, Creepy goes off and uses its services APIs to download every photo or tweet they've ever published, analyzing each for that critical piece of information of the user's location at that time. While Twitter's geolocation setting is optional, images shared on the services via like TwitPic or YFrog, often taken on a smartphone, which unbeknownst to the user, records location information in the EXIF data of the image. Creepy finds these photos, downloads them, and extracts the location data. The purpose in creating Creepy was twofold, Kavanaugh said. First, to try to raise awareness about privacy and social networking platforms. Bullshit. I wanted to stress how easy it is to aggregate all the seemingly small, innocent pieces of data that people are sharing to a larger people that potentially give away information users wouldn't think of sharing. For example, where do they live, where they work, and at what times they're hanging out, and when they're not at home, etc. I think sometimes it's worth scaring people and even more careful of how much they share online. Well, okay, that's possible. Secondly, I wanted to create a tool for social engineers to help with information gathering, which is probably more likely the case. I believe Creepy can be used for can be of real use to security analysts performing penetration testing for the initial process of gathering information about targets. Information can be used later for a number of purposes. The sheer quality of the information Creepy is able to put out to people's social networking accounts is astonishing. The really cool thing about Creepy, though, which is despite all the other cool stuff that it does, is the Creepy tool, which is released under an open source license, can be downloaded from the project website for free. So that's pretty hot. That's pretty cool. So definitely something you would find on today's Daily Hack's killer apps section. And, of course, mixing any two of these, you can imagine we've got the covert apps one. You've got Creepy there. Let's talk about Google's facial recognition app, sent in by Cyzerus. Google plans to introduce mobile application that would allow users to snap pictures of people's faces in order to access their personal information, a director of the project said this week. In order to be identified by the software, people would have to check a box agreeing to give Google permission to access their pictures and profile information, said Hartmut Nevin, Google Engineer Director of Image Recognition Development. Profiles might include a name, phone number, and email address. We recognize that Google has to be extra careful when it comes to these privacy issues, Nevin told a CNN in an exclusive interview. Before an app launches, Google plans to have acceptable privacy laws in place. While Google has begun to establish how the privacy features would work, Nevin did not say the company intends to release the product, as a Google spokesman said there was not a release timeline yet. So what they're talking about here is you can walk into a bar, go click, take a picture of a chick, and you don't even have to ask for a number anymore. And then, of course, you can take your chip, your pick, you got her name and number, bang, over to the Twit app, boom, let's see her geolocation. Oh, I know everything. Now you could be like a stalker so easy. Like, oh my god, if you wanted to be creepy stalker guy, no problem. And all these companies wanted, they're all just hiding behind the fact that people are just naturally snoopy. People are naturally stalkers. They want to do this stuff. And you know what? If the cash is there, they do not care. They don't care. There's all kinds of, like, cheap spy stuff you can get online now. The kind of stuff that we would dream about when you're kids. You could buy, like, James Bond bug kits right now out of China for, like, $20. It's out of control. It's absolutely crazy. So you know what? If you don't, I mean, I don't like it any more than you do. Don't get me wrong. I don't even like iPhones. But you know what? They got some crazy apps. There's a lot of stuff you could do with these things. There's a lot of stuff going on around you. So you can't just stick your head in the sand, man. You got to stay alert to what's going on in the world around you. And that's what I got for you today. But don't worry. I'll be back next week to make sure you get the news you need to survive. This has been a free podcast brought to you by the Wogs Who Care. If you cannot donate to the show, please distribute the show. Give it to people. Give it to truck drivers. Give it to people and let them know they're free to listen to this. And if you can donate, please do so by clicking on the Donate tab or pick up some Rant Media stuff from Rant Media Studios, Box 95089, 37 East Broadway, Vancouver, BC, Canada, V5T1W0. I want to thank the Army of the Flying Monkeys for assistance in gathering data. If you have information you'd like to send me, you can reach me at newsreel@rantradio.com. And be sure to sign up for the Rant newsletter by sending an email to info@rantradio.com. If you like the music in the background, make sure you check out some Psytrance, and we're going to fade out now with one of the tracks from my own personal collection. Remember, everyone, we will never defeat the enemy if we're at each other's throat. So until next time, that's what Server said. End of line.
They're the same